So today we're here with Dave Rubin of the Rubin Report, and personally I have to say that I'm very excited to talk to you, Dave, because I've been following you for years, and I find it very encouraging for someone like me who a lot of times I'm in a minority in my profession. I'm in a you know I'm an editor at a newspaper, and most people here also are left-leaning, even maybe woke, you could call them. And even though for Israel, woke is very different than in America. So I find it, so it's an honor to talk to you just in terms of someone who maybe could relate to what I'm going through here.
Well, I appreciate that. And yeah, from what I understand, actually, especially in the last couple of months with everything that's happened in Israel, your left may be coming to its senses just a bit. It's not that you can kind of defeat the woke in one day, and you guys have much bigger things to defeat right now than the woke. But I do suspect that some of your lefty colleagues are probably going through their own awakening at the moment. And really, for people like us, the job is to just open up the door and hopefully they'll eventually walk through.
So let me maybe we'll just go through that. What did when October 7 happened? We saw people in the U.S. in my old hometown, in New York, in Brooklyn, New York, right next to where my dad lives. There was protests of just thousands of people, right next, pretty much right next in the neighborhood next door, just people supporting Hamas. Not even like anti-Israel. You had like thousands of people going to the streets the day after 1,200 people here were slaughtered, and just saying how great it was, basically, that they killed all these Jews. And just when I was growing up in the States, I don't think it was ever that, like, I can't imagine that happening 30 years ago. Am I
Yeah.
right?
Well, there's a couple of things going on here. I would preface it by saying something that I think should be said more, which is that most people in America and most people in the world actually do support Israel and do support the
Right.
right for Israel to exist and do what it has to do in the face of this, medieval barbarity and all of those things. Unfortunately, what's happened is, good people, all it takes for evil to thrive is for good people to do nothing. So when you see these protests, I'm not diminishing that they seem extremely scary and they purposely target Jewish areas and Jewish stores and they close down bridges and they call for genocide and all of those things. That's not to dismiss any of that. But I think what's happening is people don't realize that the average just decent good person, they're just doing nothing in the face of this. And
Right.
we can talk about why people don't do anything and why more people don't stand up. I think there's all sorts of reasons for that. But this sort of crazy fringe radical minority that still can be in the thousands of people, I mean, look what's going on in London and some other European cities. And yeah, what has now happened in Brooklyn and some American cities as well, it can be pretty intimidating. But I would say in direct answer to your question, why wasn't this happening 30 years ago? There's always been a certain amount of hate towards the Jews, obviously, and then by
Right.
extension, a certain amount of hate towards Israel. But it's algorithmically charged now. We know what TikTok is doing. We also know that for the last, 3, 4 decades, especially in American education, the leftists and the Marxists have taken over. So they've taught nothing but propaganda when it comes
Right.
to Israel. They view everything in the oppressor-oppressed narrative. Jews are a minority that is now successful, and that is the worst thing for the Marxist ideology. If they, they want their minorities to be oppressed, and Jews, by and large, through culture and religion and tradition have figured out ways to be successful. Israel's the ultimate extension of that. What are you saying? You're going to take a land that's basically a desert and or a swamp in different parts that's geographically got no oil and none of this stuff, and you guys are going to make it into a world superpower? We're not going to let you get away with that. So I think it's not to diminish the amount of hate there is, but I don't think it's the way the average person feels. It's a radical group that is extremely loud and unfortunately, I would say, has really taken over large swaths of the Democratic Party.
Right. Do you think also one of the things that I saw just in terms of like how large this ideology is? That when you look at like the Harvard-Harris poll that I saw lately, it said that young people, 18 to 24-year-olds, are like 50% basically support, understand. It was like, do you understand why Hamas did what it did? And like most, like at 90% of Americans said, no, we support Israel. But then when you went down to the 18, 24-year-olds, it was like 50% said, basically, we could understand Israel. I don't remember the exact number, but when you see that, like, total like discrepancy between young people and between everyone else? Does it tell you that, I guess, the culture and especially education in America is like totally, maybe in the West also, like totally in the entire West,
Yeah.
Europe, America is broken 100%.
Yeah, look, it tells you that the culture is broken because education is just an extension of culture. So education went awry, the culture went wrong. You know, we allowed all these ridiculous Marxist ideas to infiltrate our society. And, you know, basically what they're really telling you is that if you are perceived to be oppressed, you are allowed to do anything. You will be held to no standard. You can rape women and kill children and kidnap people and do unbelievably horrific things. And no matter what you do, you are the good guy. And thus, if you're the oppressor in this case, no matter what you do to defend yourself or to avoid civilian casualties when you defend yourself, you are still the bad guy. It's a completely ridiculous and not you. It's completely disconnected from anything real related to how humans have ever waged war or tried to make peace with their neighbors or anything else. Obviously, I believe that the cause of Israel and for Jews to live in the ancient land of Israel is completely just and everything else. But even if that wasn't the case, if you have people, warring factions, no matter where they are in the world, sets of people, one set of people is saying, we are here to kill all of you. That is what the entire Palestinian national identity is. There was no, the Palestinians are not a real people. I know that's confusing for people, but they were Arabs who lived in the Mandate of Palestine, which was part of the British Empire and Ottoman Empire. And I have no doubt that you know all this. Their movement came about in the 60s when Arafat decided that there was going to be a Palestinian national movement, meaning Arabs who lived in quote unquote Palestine, who never had a prime minister, who never had a president or anything else. But their whole national movement was aimed only at killing all the Jews. So the irony is, if the Palestinians wanted a state, the Jews would have been the easiest people to negotiate with ever. No Jew wants to live in Gaza. Now people are like, all right, we're going to have to put the army back in there. But on October 6th, there was not one person who was thought within 90% of anything close to mainstream Israel that was saying, oh, we should put more Jews back in Gaza. I think you can make an argument that, of course, Jews should be allowed to live in Gaza. Why not? Why shouldn't Jews be allowed to live in Judea and Samaria? But nobody was even making that argument. So until they decide that they are going to build a civil society for themselves and everything else, this will just continue. But I do think that the level of the attacks on October 7th were so insane, and then subsequently, you know, a months-long war with hostages and rockets and everything else, that Israel is going to finish this. The entire basis of the country is now left to having to finish this war. Otherwise, you can't lose this war. This can't be a half-assed war. It needs to end with a victory, period, despite
And I
whatever the
think,
international community says.
right, I agree. And I think also that one of the things that the international community and a lot of Americans, I think, that are on the left don't understand is that even if the politicians were to want to end the war, the public wouldn't let them here. Because, like you said, a lot of the people, even on the left, or what used to be the left or the center left, are you go to talk to them, and I remember Benny Gantz, one of the, you know, the head of the basically the center left right now in the polls in Israel, went to talk to people in the kibbutzim, and they said, we need to wipe Gaza off and make like a road to the sea. And these are people who voted for like the most left-wing parties, extreme left-wing parties, and they're telling people in the kibbutzim, they're not like they're Marxist socialists in Israel from Israel. And I think people in the West in general don't understand the what the public here, what changed in Israeli society in terms of our opinions.
Well, that's why it's also a total farce when you hear Anthony Blinken or just people all over the world now saying, all right, well, the end of this, there should be a two-state solution. It's like, well, first off, personally, I was never for a two-state solution, and there was no, I it was never a two-state solution because it would be a three-state solution because you'd have the West Bank, Israel, and Gaza. Those are three separate entities, and then Israel would basically be creating two terror states on either side of it, and it's not wide enough to even make that work. Even if it was way wider, it still doesn't make sense to put two terror states on either side of you. But it's not as if you went to the 1967 lines now. First off, they're not even asking for the 1967 lines. They're asking to end 75 years of occupation. So they want the British Empire to come back, which is kind of funny. But It's not okay. So fine, you give them a state tomorrow. Imagine, like literally tomorrow, you're like, all right, every Jew, you got to get out of Judea and Samaria. Sorry, Jesus lived there, and okay, whatever, he was a Jew, whatever. You're all going, and no Jews will live again. It's like there's no peace. There's no peace the next day. You just have more war, and everyone really knows that, except you know our pathetic. I would say, you know, what do you even call these people? The international elites who think they know how everyone should live better than the people who have to live in these places themselves.
I have like one follow-up on the younger generation. Do you think we should be concerned or even depressed, if I may be frank, about the fact that so many young people in America, who is you guys are our best ally, you're our best friend. Without you, like literally, I don't know where we would be as a country, security-wise, even just in general, just the feeling of the public that America is with us. And then you see all these young people, and these are going to be the voters of the next 30 years who will decide who will be the president, who will be the congressman, who will vote in the Congress about Israel. Should we be so like, maybe even for America, should Americans be scared?
Yeah, well, yes. I'll do the American side first, since I'm an American. I mean, I think Americans should be scared because we've allowed radicalists to take over so much of one of our parties. And we have, you know, I call them the Hamas caucus, but we have Hamas supporters in our Congress. That's a problem as Americans, putting aside Israel. I mean, we have people who fundamentally hate America now wandering around the Capitol every single day. And I'm not talking about the January 6th insurrectionists. I'm talking about AOC and Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar and the rest of them. So that's a problem for America. But as for Israel, I think that it would be best for Israel and I would say this about every nation on earth, it would be best for every nation on earth to be able to deal with as much of its stuff, whether it's economic activity or military activity or anything else, without being reliant on anyone else. Now, I get it. It's extremely complex for Israel because it's so small in a bad neighborhood and everything else. But, you know, in the last couple of years, now that they've found natural gas, there are some other resources. I get it. Like the military needs are off the charts. But being so reliant on the United States probably ultimately is not best in Israel's interests. And unfortunately, Israel's going through its own thing right now. America is a very confused nation right now. I mean, we have a president who has dementia. We're on the verge of bringing back Donald Trump. You know, we have a border that's completely open. Like, we have so many internal problems that I don't know that sort of trusting that we're going to right the ship is the right thing. But I would also say, on one bit of a more positive note, you know, I think it was Winston Churchill who said, if I'm fairly certain it's Winston Churchill, who said that, you know, if you're not a socialist in your 20s, you have no heart. And if you're not a capitalist in your 30s, you have no brain. So when you see these young people have all the wrong ideas, it's like, oh, it's because they haven't matured enough and had any life experience enough to understand what reality is. So hopefully they will age out, hopefully through school choice and some other things, our educational system will correct itself. But, you know, these are all ifs.
Right. And maybe on that note, just in like one of the things that I know, remember what that really turned me on to you was the fact that you yourself went through a sort of like thing that you just explained, where you sort of like understood that maybe where you were as a younger person was not the right way to be in terms of ideologically or how you view the world. Mm-hmm. And it was like, everybody was watching it on live, how it was happening and how you were morphing into where you are now. So maybe like, in maybe just short, could you explain to Israelis, like what happened? You were in the Young Turks, I remember, not too long ago, and now you're in the Rubin Report. So how did this happen?
Yeah, well, it feels like a long time ago. I mean, ironically, it was only 8 or 9 years ago. Yeah. But I was a lefty. I mean, I was a progressive, which the thing is, my family, I came from a New York liberal family, but liberal in the true sense of liberalism. So these were not radicals in my family, really, but we were open-minded and we would debate. And every holiday, whether it was Thanksgiving or Passover, it would be a whole bunch of people sitting around the table arguing about politics, this and that. And then dessert would be served and that was it. And we were good to go and we'd have the next holiday. And that's really how Jews have debated and done these things for generations and generations, which have given us a very strong culture. Then the progressive movement really took off in America. And I think for a lot of young people, one of the reasons that it's so appealing and why you have these ridiculous queers for Palestine and all these people out on the streets is because they just think they're so damn right because they're screaming about everything all the time. And they're always fighting imaginary Nazis, even though they're actually the Nazis and all of these things. And I think I got a little tripped up in that. And I was in that. There were several moments that woke me up to the nonsense of the progressives. The famous one is when I was doing an interview with Larry Elder, who's a black conservative. And we started talking about systemic racism. And he really, in a very respectful way, started bludgeoning me with facts. But I woke up and I didn't call him names. And subsequently, we became great friends. And I campaigned when he ran for governor against Gavin Newsom. Right. So that's a beautiful story there.
Wasn't but he another, the black face of white supremacy?
The black face of white supremacy, according to the LA Times. The other one, though, that's a little bit lesser known is that during one of the Gaza wars, a summer war, I think it was in 2014, if I'm not mistaken, I was on a panel with the Young Turks, and there were about five of the other hosts up there, and they're ranting and raving and claiming Israel's committing genocide and all of these things, and they know nothing about the history and occupation and screaming. And you can see me just, I'm arguing with all of them. Two of them were my bosses who could have fired me at the end of the day. And that was another one of the moments where I was like, wow, these people are really radical because they believe in ideology over truth. And once you do that, you will pretty much excuse anything, which kind of gets us to where we started. There is nothing, no matter how many times, one of the things that I see now is a lot of pro-Israel people are always trying to, oh, but look what hypocrites these people are. Don't they care about women? It just doesn't matter for these people. They have chosen ideology over truth. So it does not matter. There could be a massacre 10 times worse than October 7th happening to Israel, and they would not care. That is just the truth. And it's horrific to even say that. But until you realize that, you will keep making the same mistakes, wasting time and energy trying to convince these people. I would much rather spend more time and energy building a stronger society, figuring out what real answers are, and defending yourself properly rather than negotiate, you know, arguing with a bunch of people that you're never going to convince.
Right. One of the things that I just interviewed someone who works in like what's called Hasbara. She made this whole volunteer thing where they try to explain Israel. And she got to know that in Canada, there was two women who were in charge of the anti-rape unit in Alberta, Canada. And both of them signed a letter saying that there were no rapes on October 7th. And even if they were, they were justified because they were part of the resistance. And these are women who work in one of Alberta's, in Canada, one of their big universities, who are in charge of the anti-rape unit of the county. So
think how profoundly insane this is. So that the equivalent of that would be if some Jews had broken out of Auschwitz and made it into Munich, and then four Jewish men broke into a random German's home and raped a housewife. Would that be justified, or would that make any sense? Of course not. Right. Of course not. Yeah. But you're illustrating how deep this cesspool goes. And I hate to tell you, but there's no bottom to this hole.
Yeah. One of the things that I find interesting since October, and maybe even before, I should have known, we should realize it more, was until now we talked about the rift on the left, I guess, between people who are like the old guard of the Democrats. They're going and becoming extinct as time goes on, and more radicals coming in, progressives, woke people. And on the other hand, I see on the right wing sort of also a rift that's starting to become more visible, in the sense that you have people who are more isolationists, maybe you call them, like Tucker, even Candace Owens. I don't want to call her isolationist. People here were calling her anti-Semitic. I don't know. I'm not going to, you know, judge, but just maybe anti-Israel be the right word. And then on the other hand, you have people like Ben Shapiro, people like you, and others. So how would you maybe characterize what is the differences in terms of ideology inside the right in America right now?
Yeah, well, you're right that there is something happening right now on the right that I think we have to be wary of. You know, it's funny because the more isolationist string of it is coming from the Trump supporters, meaning Tucker was a big Trump guy, Candace obviously a big Trump person. So that wing seems to be more isolationist. Now, interestingly, Trump was actually, it's not that he was more isolationist, but he believed In another thing that Winston Churchill believed, which was speak softly and carry a big stick. Now with Trump, it was kind of speak crazy and carry a big stick, right? But the point being that you have peace through strength. That was a Ronald Reagan notion, and that's a notion that Israel has had for quite some time. We're not looking to fight with everybody, but if you force us to fight, we are going to do everything we can to stop you. I think what's happening now is that we are now seeing these last 3 years, we're seeing the fruits of just what a weak American administration does. The world just goes bananas. There is just simply no doubt in my mind that what happened in Israel would not have happened had Trump been president, because the Qataris would have been freaked out. The Saudi Arabians would have been freaked out for a different set of reasons. The Palestinian Authority would have realized that they were about to go bankrupt. You know, there's a lot of stuff there. But basically what I see happening now is that the more isolationist people, to some extent, I don't think they're wrong, other than if the United States doesn't have a role in the world, someone's gonna, right? Like, it's not like the United States could step away and just be like, all right, we're just taking care of our stuff, and who cares about the world, or no one will fill that vacuum. Who will fill that vacuum? You know, basically it would be China, Russia to a lesser extent, but basically all of the sort of more authoritarian regimes in the world would be emboldened. So while I am in many ways ideologically more aligned with the isolationists in that we have problems in America and we have to figure them out, that doesn't mean we have no responsibility to the world. And I would say specifically on the Israel front, even if that's the direction that America is going in, you don't abandon an ally in the middle of an existential war. You know what I mean? All the money that we give to Israel is spent in the United States for military. We don't just hand them money. It's not like that. Ukraine, we're just handing them money. The money that we give to Israel is all military aid so that they can buy American military products. Now, you may not like that. Like, you think it's a subsidy for the military industrial complex. I think that that's a perfectly fine argument. But it's a completely different economic set of rules than in a situation like Ukraine. But yeah, there is some tension there on the isolationist side. And my guess is the energy is going more towards that direction because, you know, America's done some weird, wacky wars over the last, you know, three decades.
Yeah. I want to ask you two more questions or three more because I know we're a little bit short on time. One of the things that I wanted to ask you was that I see that Biden in the beginning, he came to Israel after October 7. He gave this big speech that here, it's funny to say a speech of Biden that's a big speech because he puts you to sleep most of the time. But through falling asleep, we saw that he said, I'm a Zionist, I'm pro-Israel. And then since then, like I was maybe in the last month, he's been a little bit wobbly. Every time he says, too many people are dying in Gaza, and Blinken's here today saying, you know, you need to stop. Don't go into Rafah. Don't do this. Too many people are dying. And then he goes to Dearborn, to Michigan. I don't remember exactly where. And a day before that, he signs this thing, putting sanctions on four settlers. And do you think that the fact that he needs constituencies to vote for him because that are anti-Israel in the most radical sense is going to hamper the way the pressure is going to put pressure?
Yes.
He can put pressure on Israel in a dangerous way.
Yes, I do. I don't think Joe Biden, I actually do think Joe Biden is a Zionist. And I think if Joe Biden was as clear-minded of the Joe Biden of 20 years ago, he is a strong Israel supporter. And I think he used to understand why. I think he's completely mind-muddled right now. He's not making any of the decisions. He has the radicals running the operation. It's mostly the holdovers from Obama. And Obama definitely was no friend of Israel. And I think Biden also is now looking at this election going, where can I find some freaking votes? And if I have to pander, you know, the Jews, for all the Jews' strengths and all the good things the Jews have brought to America, it's less than 1% of the voting population. Right. And for whatever reason, despite all of this, Jews still vote largely Democratic. So he's basically like, I've kind of got the Jews. They're never going to vote for Trump.
I need the Muslims.
So let me see what I can do over there. So it's a really cynical ploy. And it's been very disappointing to watch Anthony Blinken. In some ways, having a Jewish Secretary of State is the worst thing because he has to prove that he's not really a Jew, sort of.
Yeah. I know you were a big DeSantis supporter during the I'm talking like as if the primaries are over, but they're practically over, if I can say, it seems to me. First of all, like, do you think that DeSantis really couldn't? It seems to me no one could have done anything to beat Trump with this Republican electorate. And if you agree with me, why is that? Like, what is the hold on Trump? Because a lot of Israelis are like, we love Trump. He was great for Israel. He's as a as a, I would say, a classical liberal myself, his policies seemed okay, but better, I guess, than Obama's was before him. But what is the such an allure about Trump? He's like you said, speaks loudly and has a big stick. What's going
I
on?
think there's a couple of things going on here. I mean, first off, just quickly on the DeSantis front, I think he was the best candidate that Republicans have had in probably since Reagan. He didn't have any flaws. He does what he says he's going to do. He's an honest, good man, 45 years old, good family. Didn't have one big flub or mistake on the campaign trail. He just could not figure out the Trump thing. And as you said, I don't think you can blame him for that. Maybe they could have tried some other things, but the energy is of the base is with Trump. And I think largely that's because of these ridiculous court cases trying to take Trump off the ballot. It's because of the other legal battles that Trump's going through. It fires up the base. They ultimately they're just like, you know what? Who cares about policy? Look what they're doing to that guy. And I am sympathetic to that argument. And I also have to tell you that, as you know, I'm a Floridian, which is the other promised land. And as a Floridian, I have to say, since he's been back here these last 3 weeks, I'm very happy that things are going to continue to go well in Florida. And I do hope that Trump will beat Biden because that'll set things straight a little bit at least. So it is what it is. But you know, we have the beauty of states' rights in America, where you know, if you live in Florida, it's very different than if you live in California. You guys aren't big enough for that. So whether you live in you know, Ramat HaSharon or Eilat, it's not that different. Although I guess a little more beach down south.
One last question, just a personal note. I know you're very close to Jordan Peterson, and I just want—I saw you say in a few interviews that you had when I was reading about you before, just to be a little bit ready, was that he basically changed your life in a lot of ways, and you used a lot of different words. But my basic understanding was that the way he thinks, made you think in a different way, and I guess maybe also, so my first question, like just in a two-part question, is one, why is that and how did that happen? And second of all, he himself is being now basically taking his psychology license away from him for thinking the way he thinks, which is amazing just to think about what I just said. Like, what the hell is
Yeah, the
going on?
Canadian Board of Psychologists is going after his license because he was a practicing psychologist, clinical clinician before, you know, he became super famous, Jordan Peterson. They don't like the way he's tweeting and what he's saying about trans people, so they're trying to take away his license. I mean, he's going to fight them to the ends of the universe, so we'll see what happens with that. Look, what I can tell you about Jordan is that I've never seen someone who is out there really trying to live the very ideas that he's talking about every day to the best of his ability. I don't think he's the perfect person. I don't think he's, you know, Jesus. But what I do think is that he has tried to set some order into the world, and there are literally millions of people worldwide who have needed to hear some of that order and to help themselves get over a lot of our problems with modernity and what the algorithms have done to us, and poor parenting and drug abuse and physical abuse and all of those things. And he's done an incredible job by doing that. I mean, you know, when I toured with him for a year, I saw people that were no longer in abusive relationships. I saw people that were not on heroin anymore. I saw people that hadn't spoke to parents in years that were suddenly together again. Every story that could bring tears to your eyes, I saw. And that's by the will of one man saying that he wanted to put more order rather than chaos into the universe. And I suppose that's something that we should all strive for.
And I think just to put it, one of the things that I just from listening to him, and I'm not obviously a big as maybe a fan or a follower of his like others are, is basically the fact that he's pro personal responsibility. And I think in a world that you have so many ways to run away from reality, basically, and of the day to day, and stay at home and look at screens and not meet people and not, you know, not do your bed. One of his big things was to do your bed every morning. Is like, I think that's the number one important thing, and I think it's amazing what he's doing. So, and it's amazing what you're doing, and I appreciate you being with me. And when you're in Israel, you're invited to us for Shabbos. So that's
Well,
another
I think I'm
invitation.
coming. I think I'm coming for a week in March, so I will take you
So
up
we'll
on that.
talk. So thank you very much, and I really appreciate it. It was great.
It was my pleasure, Ariel. Thank you.
Bye, Dave. Thanks.